Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. Jack Piatelli. Jack, we got one of your guys in studio today.
Very excited. Good friend of mine, Coach Keith Campbell, head coach at Long Meadow High School. Pleasure. It took us a while to get him in. Coach, we had a conversation when we started the show a year and a half ago, and I said, Coach, love to have you in for the podcast. He said, I'm not going to come in until I win the state championship. Well, here you are, Coach. You won the state championship. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Jack. I really appreciate you guys having me. The amount of guests you've had, I really feel appreciative that you guys would have me in here, and I'm happy to be here today.
We love champions at Chasing the Goal, and I was at this championship game, just one of the most exciting high school games, period, that I watched all season. It was a double OT thriller against Billerica that you won 9-8, and whenever I talk about the game, I always talk about the last play, but there were so many key plays throughout the game, and I'm just wondering which one besides the game winner stood out to you when you think back on the game.
Well, I think back on the game, and I think there's a number of situations that occurred that to the avid lacrosse fan, they might recognize it, but people switching around, we had to make some matchup changes, move one of our close defensemen to midfield to stop one of their powerhouse players. We had to take a midfielder and have him play with short stick on a close on an attackman. And those are the types of, they're not necessarily plays, but those were the types of things that allowed us to get back in the game, being down most of the game. And I think I appreciate basically that our guys were willing to do whatever it took to get us back in the game.
Do you think, having played in the championship game last year and coming so close, the players that came back learned something from that experience and got them over the top this year?
There's absolutely no doubt that the experiences these seniors had in their sophomore year during the COVID season made them more committed to lacrosse, and the experience we had in the state championship last year, I believe, is why, you know, myself and the coaches on the sidelines felt, even though we were down, that our players were going to win that game. You know, there's a lot of old sayings. I love old sayings. They say adversity built or shows your character. I would say that one of the ones I heard recently is adversity is the mother of success. And the adversity that these guys had, missing their whole sophomore year, really, I think, as seniors and being in the state championship as juniors, had everything to do, that adversity, with the success that the team had.
Yeah, I remember talking to Hanrahan after the game, and I have his quote up, but I remember him saying it to me. His eyes really big after he won. He's really excited, but he also got very serious and said, we remember the feeling from last year, falling short. We knew it wasn't happening again. This year, we knew we were taking it home. It's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Just shows how good of a community we have. And I think that kind of, you know, spoke to it as well, because, I mean, at championship games, everybody is showing out from both schools, right? the Billerica contingent actually happened to be by the press box, and they were very rowdy and supportive, I shall say. But there was plenty of Long Meadow, like, shirts in the crowd and whatnot. And having it kind of in the middle, right? It was at Worcester State. We should give the context for that. It was at the campus of Worcester State. And it very central, a little closer to you guys than it probably was for Billerica. But did the atmosphere of that and playing, having it be a night game and having it come after the D1 championship, did that play into anything for you guys at all?
Well, I think, you know, Colson's quote that you speak of was kind of the mantra, not through the coaches, through the players and the leaders on our team. They talked about it a lot. We tried to, you know, keep them focused as coaches the whole year long on just the next game up. But you can't, in the mind of a 16, 17, or 18-year-old, when you suffer that type of defeat that they did the year before, they absolutely were committed to having that happen. And I think the environment fueled it even more. It took really their intensity and elevated it to a level that was just wonderful to be a part of. I was not much different of a spectator than you, just being able to enjoy it because of the volume of the game. They had to do what we had taught them. They couldn't hear a word we were saying.
Yeah, I think, I coached this year in Division III in New Hampshire, and we got to the state title game, and we lost. And I remember the one thing that sticks out for me is, how emotional it was for the guys on the field and how, I'm carrying guys. I'm like, we have to go stand in line. We have to get our medals. Let's go. Let's pull it together. Carrying guys over because and that's good. I feel like that's good because that meant it meant a lot to them. Right. I think knowing now what I went through, I would be a better coach in that situation too. And I would have a little bit better reaction for the players. Do you think that happened to you as well?
Yes, I'll tell you a funny story that relates to that. We actually, had been, this was our fourth state championship in 7 years and twice to the state semifinals where we had lost. And that emotion that you talk about seeing your players in New Hampshire, we had absolutely happen. And I used to say all the time on the bus ride home after those really tremendous losses that the only regret I had in coaching was seeing that emotion at the end, the crying and the seniors getting up and talking to the juniors and sophomores about, the experience and really what the whole year had been and trying to make it palatable. The funny part of the story is that on the bus ride home this year, I had to tell them I didn't know they were going to cry harder when they won than when they lost. And to your point, Kyle, I think it shows, I take that as a compliment that myself and the other coaches were able to have them buy in enough that they would be that emotional about success or failure.
Yeah.
Coach, Longmeadow is a storied program, been around for many, many years, a lot of great teams. You played on a state championship team. Expectations every year are extremely high. If you don't win a state championship, they're like, wow, we didn't have a very good season. You step in. This is going to be, I believe, your eighth season as the head coach at Longmeadow High School. How difficult was it for you to step in an environment like that when you first got started?
It was something I was a ball boy in 1972. So it was something that I had really a clear picture of what it was. Longmeadow had had a tremendous success 2 years before I had become the coach. But the year before, they lost in the Western Mass Finals. That hadn't happened in a significantly long time. So I think that I was lucky at the beginning to have taken over a team that hadn't had the success that they were accustomed to. But there was a lot of things, I lived in the town. I watched the team play. The two preceding coaches, Coach Rossio and Coach Leibel before me, had done great jobs. The thing I wanted to bring back was the alumni and the culture that allowed Longmeadow to have the tremendous success. And, I had a plan. I did my best to execute that. I think fast forward 7 years later, the alumni is deeply involved. They're highly supportive. And there's been a lot of other things that we've tried to do to get the program back to a point where it can be considered in that Massachusetts powerhouse type of, consideration. One of the first things I did was I reached out to people that we have relationships with. I called Coach O'Donnell down at LaSalle and Charlie Hardy at Reading and asked them to scrimmage me When I took over the program, Long Meadow was basically playing a Western Mass schedule. Charlie was considerate enough to allow us to scrimmage them and Steve, and then I reached out to some of our other people who you've had on the podcast. You know, I reached out to Coach Vonna and asked him if we could get on the schedule. And I felt like if we did those things, Coach Sweet at Duxbury, they didn't have to do that, but I told them what I was trying to accomplish, and I wanted to be like them, and I felt like the only way we could develop the culture back in Long Meadow was to copy the people that were having tremendous success. And it didn't come without us taking some lumps. You know, we took some lumps from LS over the years, and we had the opportunity to play Hingham a couple times, and I think it allowed the people in the town to really level set. It's not all about Western Mass if you want to compete at, you know, the highest level in Massachusetts. And those guys, I owe a lot of our success to.
Yeah, I think for me, coming into covering lacrosse at the high school level in Massachusetts, there really is kind of a, besides the prep and public split, there is the metro area. And then it's like, oh, you got to cover all of this. And all of this is basically Worcester out, and Western Mass is actually what I like about Western Mass. It's a lot like New Hampshire. It's kind of the same place, right? Like you have towns and you have little communities everywhere. And I think yours is probably one of the largest that has been built, Long Meadow, in that region. And because of that, there is the, you know, the added pressure, as kind of Jack was alluding to, of winning. And how has that changed for you in the last few years versus before COVID?
I would say, you know, I don't want to discount Western Mass because there's some good teams out there, you know, Westfield and Minichog and Pope Francis. There's some good teams. I honestly can say, yes, we want to have success, but it's, I feel like if we do the right things, play the right teams, teach our kids, you know, our principles, winning will take care of itself. And we want to win, but that's not really what we spend our time focused on. We spend our time focused on the camaraderie of being on a team, you know, preparation, effort, repetition. Those are the things that, and I, you know, we try very, very passionately as a coaching staff to convey those messages to the players and, most importantly, the parents. And hopefully winning takes care of itself if you do those things. And that, I don't think that's unique to high school lacrosse. I think that's, you know, high school lacrosse is not my business. I've been in the business world for a very long time. Those principles apply in anything, right? A culture, a sport, a business. So winning, yes, we want to do it, but really what we want to do is do the right things, act the right ways, and represent our community and our legacy at Long Meadow in the appropriate fashion.
Coach, for a very long time at the college level, and recently went back to high school, and my last 2 years at Hopkinton, I had something I've never had before, and it's great parents. And what I realized is, if you have great parents, you have great kids, because great kids come from great parents. And if you don't have that before, you're kind of doing a lot of the work. And that actually is the thing that drains you, not wins and losses. And it's revelation coming after like 20 years of being in it. But do you agree with that? Do you share that kind of viewpoint?
Yeah, absolutely I do. And I'm very lucky. You know, as Jack said earlier, there's a legacy in our town. And people are familiar with the sport, but they're supportive of it because of its success. And I can honestly say that, you know, I'm sure that there's voices that criticize me, but I take comfort in the amount of support I've gotten over the 7 years, whether that's supporting the team from the booster program of the parents or encouraging the kids or team dinners. We have a great network of people, and I think that is true, Kyle. I mean, I've seen it in the club program, you know, working for Jack. I think that our most successful teams are those built with our parents that have the greatest camaraderie on the sidelines. And you can see that in both the high school and the club game, and I do agree with you. But, you know, the problem is that, you know, it's no different, again, than anything else, is complaints echo louder than compliments. And I think in Longmeadow we have a great support group. I think the parents want the program to be successful and always are willing to lend a helping hand, and I'm thankful for it.
Every great program has a culture, strong culture. Longmeadow's had a long-standing culture. When you took over the program, it lost its sort of flair, its culture. So what did it take for you to get the program back to being where it is today? And talk a bit about what the culture means. What is culture in a program?
Again, I've been lucky enough to learn that in my profession. And, you know, working with young individuals who were graduating college, I often would speak to them about their experiences athletically. And I kind of think I had a little bit of a cheat sheet. But, we have some principles. Camaraderie is number one. We're going to support each other 110%. I know it's hard when the coaches have high expectations, but a lot of communication goes into the program about having camaraderie. I think that you have to hold the individuals to a high standard of effort, right? And we're pretty passionate, myself and the coaches, and you know, again, I love old quotes. The Alabama coach, Coach Saban, says that passion sometimes looks like aggression. But we're really passionate about what we're doing. And to the unmotivated, it might look aggressive. But from us, we feel like the kids, if they're passionate about lacrosse, they're going to play better. They're going to love it. Some of the other things that I really feel like we needed to do is we needed to have a lot of preparation, not necessarily X's and O's, more situational preparation. And we do a lot of that. We do a lot of film. We do a lot of preparation, you know, walking through situations and sets, not necessarily, again, plays. But I feel like that and repetition, if you have the right camaraderie on the team and you have repetition, effort, everything will take care of itself.
I've had a firsthand look at your program from when you took it over and where it is today, and I have a great appreciation, obviously, for what you've done and a lot of respect for you as a coach. And what parents don't understand and outsiders don't see is the time and the effort not only the coaches put in off-season and the programs you have to develop their skill sets to become better people, better players, bring up the camaraderie amongst the players, be a good teammate, you know, be the next man up. Don't pout if you're not out there, because you had players that didn't play in the championship game last year, right? Now this year, they're making contributions to winning that game. And you've taught them to be, you know, patient, understand there's a process, and it's not instant gratification. And in Longmeadow, a lot of times, from what I've seen, spending a lot more time in Western Mass, is you have a lot of instant gratification. Johnny's not playing, okay? But those kids that weren't playing are much better people, teammates, and players today, because they have a greater appreciation for now being out in the field and being a contributor. Whether it's that one grain of ground ball in the double overtime game that come up, you know, in those type of situations you talk about. But it's a process.
Yeah, I would say that I don't think it's Longmeadow. I think I've seen it change even in the 8 years where it's, and, you know, you talk about it. I've heard you guys talk to a number of coaches, is that, you know, a lot of parents want to make it about Jimmy or Johnny, and we try to make it about the brand. We try to make it about the culture. And I think that gets you more buy-in, and I think it gives you better results in the end. But there is a process, and there is opportunities. The other thing that, you know, we've tried to do, which I think has helped our culture tremendously, is that we've brought in kids that haven't necessarily played lacrosse, in their junior, sophomore, or freshman years that are the captain of the football team, the captain of the basketball team, the captain of the soccer team, and that affects culture. When they have gone and watched, you know, their friend win the winning goal in the state semifinals in soccer, and then he's not on the field but cheering them on, or the middle linebacker on the football team is at practice every day and not getting reps in the state championship game but being a great teammate, that can change a culture very quickly. And I think over the last 2 years, that made a huge difference for the success that we had.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
What do you make of players that are kind of, lacrosse is not their primary sport, but they come into your program and they make, you know, a lot of people I think have the idea that those players are, you know, D-middies or fourth attackmen or like sixth defenseman or something like that. But in my experience, coaching and watching teams, those guys play real roles. Like they're on the wing for the draw, for the game-winning face-off. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of their role. How do you integrate those guys into your culture and while they bring another culture with them?
Well, I would say two of those individuals who hadn't played lacrosse for their high school career that were seniors started in the last two state championship games. We just try to take the best athletes and put them on the field. And because somebody's played lacrosse since they were in the second grade, it doesn't mean when they're a senior in high school that that's going to be it. And guys that choose, you know, to be multi-sport athletes, I completely support that. And, you know, lacrosse, it's not that complicated of a game, right? If you played basketball, if you played football, if you played soccer, get your stick skills, get on the wall a little bit, and we'll teach you the rest of the situation. So I think that we probably do that more than most programs, and it's worked for me and my coaches, and I've been really lucky. You know, Jack's commented a bunch, my program, it's not my program. There's a lot of people in our town that bleed black, and there's a lot of people that I've had the best assistant coaches, people volunteering time. I'm very lucky to be surrounded, as in any successful team or business, by great people. My assistants are spectacular and committed, and they invest equitable to the amount of time that I put into it. And it does take a lot of time, as Jack said. But if you love it, I say to everybody, I don't play golf. Lacrosse is my hobby.
Yeah.
Again, very good friends with Keith, and I know Keith's a type A type guy. If you don't know Keith, you don't know him at all, really, because outside looking in, he looks like a disciplinarian, which he is. Sometimes can be a little hot-tempered, which he can be. He has calmed down a little bit over the years. But the one thing I will say about Keith is nobody is more dedicated to his kids in the program, watching film, raising money for the program, getting buses for the teams to travel in. And that's why he's having the success that he's having, because it all starts at the top with the coach, and the players see the time and the effort that he puts in to make these better players not only better, but buying into the system. And when buying into the system and having success, you know, creates more interest in the program and getting more players to join the program.
Absolutely.
So I want to go back to kind of the idea of other players from other sports jumping in and playing lacrosse. Which athlete translates the best for you?
I have a tendency to believe basketball.
Same. Everyone says hockey. I didn't play hockey. I played basketball. I think it's the same defensively, almost. Like, very similar defensively. Like, it's the footwork is there. You can teach a basketball kid how to do so many things because there's footwork for not only defense but offense. And that translates, like, right away, as does, obviously, the explosive athleticism.
Yeah, and hockey players, I do agree, you know, there could be an argument made for many things. I do think that the basketball players, the defensive positioning, you know, protecting the hub, you know, keeping out of the middle, creating shots that are not the highest percentage, all those things are very easy to teach a basketball player. Obviously, hockey players are used to having their head down, and they're fabulous on ground balls.
Yes.
But an overall player, I think that I've had success in my coaching career teaching and training basketball players how to be, you know, very good lacrosse players, even if they've had a gap in their playing time.
Getting a hockey kid to shoot overhand was the hardest thing I've done as a coach in my whole life, because they just all want to shoot underhand or three quarter, and you're like, just trust me. All you have to do is bring it above your shoulder. Hey, rest it on your collarbone. This is how you play wall ball. Let's try this. And if, you know, not for nothing, I was wrong about that kid because he just scored underhand all the time. So it's just sometimes you got to let him just be what they are.
Hockey players tend to have better hand-eye coordination. Basketball players know how to run a pick and roll.
Yes.
You know, that's really what it comes down to.
It's just picking and choosing.
Yeah, and I think basketball is the same game. You know, you're working for one shot on offense and, you know, communicating on defense and, you know, watching the picks and slides and so on and so forth. Hockey's really not the same game. I think you pick up a skill that that enables you to pick up lacrosse pretty quickly with your hand-eye and, you know, stick handle on the puck and then cradle in the lacrosse ball. So, but they do have their heads down quite a bit. And coach, now as a head coach of Long Meadow, you've done a fabulous job working with your players, talking with them and their parents, finding an opportunity beyond high school. Talk a little bit about that. And one of the things that I recognize most is you're finding not only an opportunity for them to play lacrosse, but a great school that fits them both academically and athletically, and how important that is to you and to the players.
Yeah, I tell everybody it's the most enjoyable part of the job. I love doing it. It's funny that when I started the very first time, I went in the gym and I told the kids, you know, my philosophy is taking the sport of lacrosse to build principles that will help them athletically and academically in college or in their careers. And I've actually had guys that graduated from college and bring that back up to me and say, "Coach, can you help me get a job now?" Which has been very rewarding to help do that. But the first step is finding a home. Obviously, you know, I started coaching, you know, I was in my senior years. I did it as a volunteer in youth and assistant in high school. But when I took over Long Meadow, I wasn't afraid to call anybody. And I felt like, you know, the culture that we were trying to build would be, you know, transcend most college programs. I try to keep the players and the parents realistic. But there's nobody, as you know, that I'm not afraid to call anyone and pick up the phone and talk about the attributes of the individuals that we've worked with. In my time there, we've had some tremendous success. You know, we don't have the biggest and the strongest and the fastest athletes compared to some of the programs. So our guys might be better suited for D2 or D3. I know Kyle highly respects the Northeast 10.
Any 10, baby.
It's littered with Long Meadow players. I mean, mm-hmm. Southern New Hampshire, Assumption, St. A's, Bentley. We've done a great job there. And those coaches that I speak of at the programs, you know, I think we've delivered what we've committed on. So our reputation for those players precedes themselves. A lot of them have gone on to be captains at the universities that they've gone to. And that's really rewarding for the coaches and myself, you know, to know that we've prepared them for the next level. And it's always good to have those conversations, and we'll continue to do that. You know, our seniors this year are all going to very good institutions. We got, you know, somebody going back to Merrimack. We have somebody going to RPI. We have somebody going to Tampa. You know, we are placing kids, at good schools. We have somebody going back to Bentley this year. So we're very proud of that. And we're very proud that we're developing them to a level that they can go on and be successful and meet our mission statement.
Now, you graduated from Long Meadow High School, right? Now you're the head coach there. I think that's almost every player's dream when they finish playing to go back and coach. Do you reflect on that at all, or is it just kind of like old hat now, like you already did it, or you think about that?
Every day I go out on the field, and I've also gotten some alumni into the JV program. We talk about it every day, going when we stand out on the field where we once practiced and look around and get ready. It's great to reflect on that. And, you know, growing up in the town and having an older brother play and really looking at the sport as something that, you know, really affected me in a positive manner, I love that opportunity. And I did coach at other high schools. I was the assistant at East Long Meadow for a couple of years. I coached at Amherst. But there's something special at being at your alumni and being able to, you know, coach the team that you played for.
Yeah. I think I get that. I actually get that question just because people are like, oh, you're a media guy and you coach. I coach where I coach because it's the town next to where I grew up. And my school didn't field a lacrosse program for 2 years because of COVID. So I couldn't go coach at my school, but that's the next best thing. And I hated this school growing up, but now I love it. And all I do is talk about it. And everyone's just like, ugh. All my friends from high school are just like, ugh, why are you coaching there? And they're just like, it's so great. I love it. I think it's a community connection. You know, it's in your head too, but it's also like when you can build something with those kids that is more representative of something greater than your season, something greater than your sport, something greater than your effort. That's really what the return on coaching is, which is why, like, when I have coaches on, I always try to pinpoint something or get like a piece of advice for upcoming coaches. How can they give back? Because I'm from an area of the country. Forget New England, area of the country where we just need more coaches. And I don't know how to get them. Like, I know that we need more. We need more instruction. So what would be your advice for new incoming coaches and how to bring coaches back into the game?
I would say you have to just get guys to try it. I've done that in the community, and I've brought guys back. And it wasn't without a lot of convincing that right. I needed to do that. But I tell you that once they come back, they say it's one of the most satisfying things that they've done. And I've been lucky enough. I brought three or four guys back into the program that lived in the community whose kids either graduated or, you know, didn't have children, but they lived in the community for their whole life and played lacrosse. And I think people just need to give it a chance. And it's too, I think my earlier point, I think it applies to everything. Complaints are much louder than compliments, and you just need, you need to look within what you're doing and take the satisfaction out of the time and effort. And I can honestly say I don't think there's anything professionally that I've done that's as rewarding as coaching a high school program, any sport.
Coach, talk a little bit about your mission statement or part of your mission statement. And obviously you have a lot of great friends in the game, and the game's been very good to Kyle and to you and to me. We're very blessed. And but part of your mission statement is friends for life. And you have a lot of very good friends in the lacrosse world. But I know that's a message you like to pass along to your players at every level.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big part of why I got, you know, your sons and my sons together to go up to Lake Placid, right? I have so, you and I both share so many common friends. Many of the guys that have been on the podcast, you know, my friends from UMass, Stevie Moreland and Jerry Byrne. I'll be with them next weekend. We go away every couple years on a UMass alumni weekend event. Your relationship and the guys that we played with at Atlantic, it's you always know them. You can see them on a field. You want to go get a cold drink with them. It's so rewarding. And you know, when our boys got to be done with college, I we did this thing with them, and I watched, you know, when we were sitting on the deck with Kyle and talking to them, I watched their eyes light up talking about being together, right? It's friends for life. And, you know, if you have that level of camaraderie and common interests, really, you're only going to get along well with each other. And I think that friends for life message was very strong with our team this year. A lot of them were either related or their parents grew up together. And I think that's why, to Kyle's earlier point, that Colson said what he said, right, is that to win, and, you know, I heard Coach Asiaf say it when he was on the podcast, there's nothing better than winning with the kids that you went to kindergarten with or come in your house and go in your refrigerator and take a milk out, right? That there's no better opportunity to be surrounded by them. And if you have the opportunity to win with them, there's nothing better. So I just try to continually reinforce that.
And the other message, too, you've conveyed over the years, and players obviously realize it, in order to have that success, it doesn't matter what your role is, right? You're successful, you win a championship, but just being part of that and having that camaraderie, friendship, and like, they're going to be friends for life. I know, you know, we've been friends forever. I don't know I'll be friends with Kyle the rest of my life, but
staff and I will be.
But it's a powerful, powerful tool, really, to get in on a team, and you like all your teammates, and they're all rooting for you, whether you're playing or you're not, you're 45th or first. The guys just believe in each other, having fun, and let's go out and do it.
I would say that has been consistent for my time. Obviously, we won this year. The guys were very supportive of each other, but I can honestly say they had a great model. The guys before them, you know, the 21 class, we didn't have a 20 class, the 19 class. These seniors saw others be supportive, whether they were on and off the field. And I can tell you that I saw it. You know, whether it was, you know, somebody that didn't get in, goalie, attackman, midfielder, defenseman, didn't matter. They enjoyed winning as a team equally as much as the person that got the assist, the ground ball, or the goal. And that's what made this season so gratifying for all of us as coaches in the program.
I want to ask you one final question. So you're a high school coach, and you also coach Piatelli, so pretend Jack's not here. Coach at the club level. What's the biggest difference for you, and do you have to change how you coach between the two things?
I think, actually, you're in the high school level, you're held to what you have, right?
Right.
I'm not like you know, a prep school. I get given what I'm given, right? And I find that to be rewarding. Like, it's like making something, you're cooking something, and you can't choose the ingredients, right? And with club, you know, in my tenure, I've done it with two teams for Jack, one of the teams for 8 years and one of the teams for 7 years. You can go out and you can get a missing piece in the club game, and it's fun if you're kind of a mad scientist to figure out. And over the years, coaching with Bussy Adams for Jack, we needed things, and we were able to get things to put together that allowed us to compete and make everybody on the field better. And I think that's the biggest difference. I don't think one's better than the other, but I think you choose your players in club, and you know, you can choose players for their on-field or off-field attributes in club. Mm-hmm. In high school, you get given what you're given, and you have to cook the recipe with somebody else's ingredients, and it's fun, and it's very rewarding if you can have success doing it.
That's a Bill Parcells quote. When he was not the general manager for the Patriots, he said, you can cook the meal, but he wasn't getting the ingredients because someone else was picking the players at the draft.
Not shopping at the grocery store.
He doesn't buy green bananas, I think was the actual quote, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
I'm old. I remember stuff.
That's pretty good. So you watch a lot of college lacrosse. You played college lacrosse. But what do you like about the game, and what do you don't like about the game? How it has evolved over the years?
I love all lacrosse. I watch a lot of all lacrosse. I think as do the guys on my right and left. Mm-hmm. Because I'm in public high school, I love every aspect of the college game. I love the shot clock. I love the speed at which the game is played. I love to see, with the changes in the game, the two-way midfields. I think that's one of the things, that's our bread and butter at Long Meadow. I think college lacrosse needs more of that, but I think the speed of the game, the shot clock, the new rules that have put in place make it more exciting. I know why they did it, and I think it's great. But the two-way midi and the development with the rule changes to that, I think is great. I see in a lot of high schools they're still trying to put guys in a box and have offensive and defensive midfielders. And I would tell you, if you watched our state championship game or state final game, we sub on offense, right? And our guys go both ways, and I think it's makes the game more exciting. And hopefully, because we're doing that, our guys will be more prepared for the next level. We're not keeping them in a box. But I love the college game. I love the professional game, and I love the speed of it.
Great. Well, Coach, we want to thank you for coming on the podcast. Finally, getting you in here before you came in. Jack said, this is going to be one of our best guests. He's very articulate. Don't worry about it. And for once, Jack was right. It was great.
Thank
great
you.
Great to see.
Thank you.
Thanks, Coach.
Really appreciate you guys having me.
Yes.
It's great having you.
Thank you so much. And we want to thank you again for listening to New England Cross Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli and our producer, Steve Safran, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.